holding on Pei Zion Omer Aleph about a third of the way down the Omer line against Shohu. Okay, we ended in the middle of a discussion, kind of, which was, we started like this. Our Mishnah had told us that there's a difference between before Chatzos and after Chatzos regarding putting back a varin, limbs of Korbanos, that fell off or jumped off or whatever off the Mizbech. So we discussed that there's a difference, that the difference specifically applies shrivi to pieces that became hardened by the fire but didn't actually get burnt to charcoal or ashes yet. So those, we said, if they fall off before Chatzos, you have to put them back. If they fall off after Chatzos, you don't have to put them back. So that led us
between an Oscar was the result of
that's we said, the Mishnah said before and after Chatzos. Yeah. We learn from a pasuk. Okay, so then we started a discussion as follows. We have two different cases. One was they fell off before Chatzos and you put them back after Chatzos. The other was they fell off before Chatzos and you put them back after Alois HaShachar. So in both those cases, Rabba says you have to wait until the following Chatzos for it to be considered ikul, for it to be considered that they're completely burnt, where they don't have to put them back anymore. And according to Rashi, that you can even use them for Terumah Kedeshin. And according to Rav Chisda, in the first case, you'd have to wait until the Alois HaShachar, and in the second case, there's never any ikul, you just have to wait until they're actually physically burnt to ashes. So the last thing we said was that Rav Yosef questioned the premise of Rabba's and Rav Chisda's statements. Their premise is they're both assuming that if the thing is off the Mizbeach at the time, at the moment of Chatzos, then you need to talk about when ikul takes place. Rav Yosef argues that why should that be? Wherever they are, whether they're on the Mizbeach or not, comes Chatzos, then that's it. They should be considered that they've already been burnt. And the last thing we said was that they sent a message from Eretz Yisrael, Shalchom Itam, that indeed the halacha is like Rav Yosef in the sense that not that literally the halacha, but in the sense, in other words, that he has a good point. He has a good point that it ought to be considered equal whether they're on the Mizbeach at Chatzos or not, and therefore this whole question of whether you have to wait till the next Chatzos or whether you have to wait till the Alois HaShachar or whatever shouldn't even be read. So, the Gemara says, Itmar Nami. So we said also that it wasn't just Rav Yosef saying that. Omer of Chiyah Ba'aba, Pirushu Kodim Chatzos, Ve'at Ziron Ach Chatzos, if pieces of a korban separated, meaning they fell off or jumped off the Mizbeach, before Chatzos, Ve'at Ziron Ach Chatzos, and he put them back after Chatzos, Loi Nenin V'loi Moyolim, then you're not allowed to have Hanah from them, because they still should be put back onto the Mizbeach, but, because they fell before Chatzos, but Loy Moyalin, but you don't have to, but Mi'ila doesn't apply to them on a Daraisa level because Chatzos already came, because Chatzos already came, and then Ikul took place. The Rashi over here learns that it means, as usual, Loy Men and Loy Moyalin means Drabban. Tosfos mentions that no, maybe what it means is you're still not allowed to have Hanel from the Minatora, because they are still locked in the Shomizbeach, but once Chatzos came, the mitzvah has been done already, and the usual rule is once the mitzvah has been done with something, then Me'ilah doesn't apply, so therefore Loinen and Vloy Marilin would actually usually Loinen and Vloy Marilin mean Dirabbananus also. Here Tosfos wants to say that it would be Daraisa. I mentioned that, by the way, in a different connection yesterday, but I was wrong about it in that connection. There, at the end of the Gemara before the previous Mishnah, before this Mishnah, when we said Loinen and Vloy Marilin, that meant, according to everybody, meant the usual thing. I mean, Dirabbananus also, according to Rav Elazar. But here, when we say Leinan and Vloy Moylin, usually Leinan and Vloy Moylin means Midrabbanon means Midaraisa, Me'ilah doesn't apply to it, in this case because the mitzvah has already taken place with it, but Midrabbanon you still shouldn't have Hana from it. So usually that's what it means, but over here Tosfos wants to say that maybe it means both the Leinan and the Vloy Moylin are Daraisa.
And
usually it means that Leinan and Midrabbanon, Vloy Moylin, Daraisa. So that's what Kriya Ba'aba says. That the Chain Tonad Bar Kapara, and Bar Kapara also taught similarly in a Braisa. Kirshu Kodim Chatzos Ve'ach Zirim La'ach Chatzos. If they fell off the Mizbeach before Chatzos and you put them back after Chatzos, Yosin Midei Me'ilah, they're exempt from Me'ilah. Me'ilah no longer applies to them, which is basically the same thing that Kriya Ba'aba is saying. And also, so now both of them are saying essentially the same thing that Rav Yosef is saying. Once Chatzos comes, then that's it. Me'ilah no longer applies. And
so what do you have to put them back?
That's the point. In other words, you don't have to put them. Well, you should put them back still because the fact is they weren't completely burnt. However, you're not obligated to. Unlike before Chatzos, you'd be obligated to put them back. But the point is, both of them are saying, like Rabbi Yosef, neither of them is mentioning whether it's on top of the Mizbeach or not. In fact, actually, both of them are talking about where it's not on the Mizbeach, at Chatzos, and we see that once Chatzos hits, then Me'ilah goes away, which follows Rabbi Yosef's logic, not Rabba and Rabbi Chisda's logic, where they were saying that if it's not on the Mizbeach, at Chatzos, then Ikul hasn't taken place yet, and you have to wait till Alos HaShachar or till the next Chatzos.
It's consistent to say that one is done, and the other one is not done.
What do you mean one is done and the other one is not done? Chatzos comes, and Ikul has taken place. That's what we're saying.
So there shouldn't be any.
That's why we're saying there's no Me'ilah after Chatzos. That's the point. We are saying repeat.
Why do you have to put them back?
Because, ideally, you should put them back. Because the fact is, there's still lach mishal mizbeach. There's still something that was partially burnt by the mizbeach, and you should still put them back there to get to finish getting burnt. But you're not obligated to. Okay. Amalet or papalat. Maybe Daraisa, maybe whatever, but I don't know if that particular detail of putting them back is Daraisa or not, but whatever. The point is that Me'ilah no longer applies to them. If you didn't put them back and you ended up using them, you wouldn't have committed Me'ilah. Okay, Amalei Rav Papa L'Abaye, so now Rav Papa asked Abaye, okay, well, given all of that, then what were Rabbah and what were Rav Chisda thinking? Once they sent from Eretz Yisrael that the halacha is like Rav Yosef, in other words, Rav Yosef has a good point that Chatzos makes the difference whether it's on the Mizbeach or not. Then we have to ask, Rabbah and Rav Chisda, but my pligi. Then what, after all, are Rabbah and Rav Chisda? What's their premise for their argument? What's their premise to say that Ikul doesn't take place always at Chatzos, but it actually needs to be on the Mizbeach? Now, granted, I mean, obviously they're Amoraim, and they have the right to argue with Shulchan Tam and so forth, but we wouldn't expect them to without a good reason. Amalei, Rabbah answers him, b'shmeini. Yes, but the case that Rabba and Rav Chisda can be talking about is specifically where these are very fatty pieces, where therefore they might have become shmuvi, they might have been hardened by the fire, but nevertheless, you can't, with a lean piece of meat, you could say once it's dried out like that by the fire, then at that point you can argue it's considered completely burnt, because then at that point it's the next thing from becoming charcoal. But over here, Rabba and Rav Chisda can specifically be talking about a case where the piece is very fatty. So therefore, even once it becomes hardened by the fire, you can't yet say that it's on the verge of...
It's fat meat, or it's just fat?
It's fat meat. We're talking about a fat piece of meat. But the fat that's embedded in the meat, obviously some of it has melted by the heat of the fire, because if the piece itself dried out, then it means that some of the fat is gone, but not all of it. Hello? And therefore, that's when Rabba and Rav Chisda could be arguing that in that case, maybe you wouldn't say that Chatzos makes, that Chatzos creates Ikul, because maybe Ikul only applies to Chatzos when it's actually literally on the verge of becoming ashes or charcoal, and it just, practically speaking, it hasn't yet, but it's like a couple of minutes away from it. But here, where it's fatty, it might be much longer from it. Therefore, they might argue that, therefore, you need it to actually reach a stage closer to being completely burnt.
So then we're coming back to the previous argumentation, saying that it's not really a consciousness now. It's the fact that they were burned.
Well, that's the thing. In other words, we would say that shuri, are considered completely burnt at Chatzos. But Abaye is saying, maybe Rabba and Rav Chisda would be saying that there's a difference within Shmuri themselves whether they're fatty pieces or not. If they're not fatty, then they would agree, comes Chatzos, then they're immediately considered burnt, whether they're on the Mizbeach or not. But if they're fatty, and therefore they're not actually on the verge of becoming ashes, then that's where they would be arguing and saying, if it wasn't on the Mizbeach at Chatzos, then that's when you would need,
It seems that until... there, just before that, we had reached an absolute conclusion that Chatzos was...
But now we're saying, well, that's the point. No, we're saying they agree that Chatzos is, but only for certain kinds of shiri. That's the point. Once we have, it's true, Rabbi Yosef pointed out, and Rabbi Ba'aba pointed out, and Bar Kapara pointed out, that come Chatzos, then that's it, Loyanin, Loyamarilin, etc. But Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef would argue that there's a difference between different types of pieces. Truth is, I mean, the Rambam doesn't even bring this whole distinction about fatty pieces or not. He just says that straight out comes up the... If they fell off the Mizbeach, right. Right. So...
Fatty,
so that's the...
Then you throw them back on?
Well, that's what Abaye is saying. That's what Rabbah and Rav Chisda would be.
Even though Rav Yosef says that Shriri... Well, Shriri is...
Shriri means hard. But that's the thing. The Rambam doesn't even bring this whole concept of Shmeinim and the Noisa Kalim and the Rambam. Rabbi Kurkus and others explain because we're only using that in order to answer what, how Rabbah and Atzista can be making an argument to the contrary in the first place. But we don't have to accept that. We don't, in other words, what Abaye is saying is, you don't necessarily, he would say, you don't necessarily have to say that Rabbah and Rabbi Chista are arguing on Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Abba and so forth. It could be that Rabbah and Rabbi Chista are talking about one case where they're fatty pieces, and Rabbi Yosef and so forth are talking about lean pieces, about regular pieces, lean pieces. So Abaye would argue that not necessarily they're arguing. However, we don't have to necessarily accept that. We could say that they are arguing, Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Abba and Bar Kappara are talking about in all cases, whether it's fatty or not. Rabbah and Rabbi Chista are talking about only in fatty, in cases of fatty meat, fine. But since we said, Hilchos HaKirav Yosef, and since we have also the Priya Ba'aba and Bakapara on his side, then what we can say is, in other words, as a matter of practical halacha, which again is why the Rambam doesn't bring this thing of Shneim, is that that's it. Hatzos comes and Ikul has taken place regardless of what kind of piece of meat. Okay. Bamine Rava Me Rava. Rava asked Rava the following question. We know that a korban becomes possible if it's left overnight. We know that in general kodshim, korbanos, menachos, etc., become possible if they're left overnight. Earlier in the sector, we learned about the water in the kiyor. It also becomes possible by lina, and that's why they had to have the contraption over there to lower the kiyor into the ground. Yeah, whatever. Fine. Yeah. Okay. So the question is lina effective if a piece of korban is on top of the mizbeach or not?
What's the question?
The question is, if a piece of a korban is left on top of the mizbeach, does lina apply to it? So the Gemara asks, hey, dummy, what's the scenario? Ilema deloy yodu, are you talking about it was never taken off the mizbeach, it remained on top of the mizbeach all night, but it wasn't on the marocha, it wasn't on the pile of wood, that it wasn't on the fire that's burning, and you're asking whether it becomes fossil? Well, of course it doesn't become fossil. Hashta lonu ba'azora, marta deloy yodu. If it stayed overnight in the Azara, where they were for sure it becomes fossil, and yet we said in our Mishnah that if it was placed on the Mizbeach, did you ever, did you not take it off the Mizbeach? It's one of the Imol Ulo Yehudu cases. So if it stayed on top of the Mizbeach, of course you don't take it down. There's no question. You put it into the fire and burn it. So what's even the question? The Elo de Yehudu. So, okay, maybe it's the question, if they were actually taken off the Mizbeach after Alot HaShachar, so you're asking then, do they become fossil? And we said in the Mishnah, Im Yodu Lo Yalu, if you took them off after Alot HaShachar, that's when Lina takes effect, yeah.
After
Alot HaShachar, yeah. So are you going to be talking Lina is when the whole night is passed and Alot HaShachar comes.
Right. So it kicks in
on Alot HaShachar. So are you going to say that we're talking about, so you're going to say, the question is, if they were taken off the Mizbeach. Now, we know we said in the Mishnah that the Psulim, im yodu lo yalu, that if they were taken off the Mizbeach, you don't put them back on. So then the question is, are these fossil or not, or are they not fossil since they were on top of the Mizbeach all night? The question, therefore, is like this. L'shulchan midamin Allah, should we say that we compare the Mizbeach in this case to the Shulchan? In this, that we compare it in this regard to the Shulchan, where the Lechem HaPanim is, the Tznan, and we learn regarding the Shulchan and a Mishnah and Menachos.
The
Shulchan is in the Hechel,
so fine,
because we can still compare. We find with the Shulchan that if the Lechem HaPanim is left on it beyond the time that it's supposed to, it doesn't become fossil. We could argue that the Mizbeach is similar, and the reason why. It doesn't have the same exact kedusha, but still, you could still argue there's a similarity. For one thing, because Tosfos points out, because the Shulchan and the Mizbeach both have this in common, they're both kalim that are set in place and remain there, as opposed to regular clay sharet, a basin for the blood or clay sharet, yeah, removable. I mean, the Shulchan is movable. They did, in fact, the Mishnah tells us at the end of Chagiga that they would lift it up and show it, the Gemara tells us that they'd lift it up and show it to the early regal to show them how Lacham Aponim still stays fresh all week, that it was a nest. But so it is movable, but the fact is, they kept it in the most of the time, they kept it in place. and the Mizbeach, the Mizbeach and the Midbar was also movable, all the Kalim were. The one in the Beth Mikdash was built into the floor, but the point is, they both of them stay in place, so therefore there's reason to argue that you should compare them with each other. Ramosha Feinstein talks about, in one of his Trugas, he talks about another reason is because most Klei Sharis, whatever it is that you put into them, it's not the final thing that you do with it. You put a mincha into a Klei Sharis, for example, with the purpose of afterwards you're going to take the koimetz and burn it on the mizbeach, and the koyim are going to eat the rest, same thing blood and the mizrach, same thing most other things that go in a Klei Sharis, as opposed to the lechem aponim being placed on the shulchan. That's it. That's where it remains for that week. It's a purpose in itself. And similarly, a korban being burnt on the mizbeach, that's a purpose in itself. There's no other avodah after that. Well, no, they're not. Actually, they stay there for a whole week. Then they take the lavoina that goes with them and burn it on the mizbeach, and the kohenim eat the lachem upon him, and they replace it with fresh lachem upon him. Fine, but the point is still placing them on the shulchan. That's where they're supposed to remain. It's an avodah in itself. Well, that's the question. In other words, so that's the question. So should we compare the mizbeach in this regard to the shulchan? The tnan, namely, we learn in a Mishnah in Menachos, Afilu hein al shulchan yomim rabim. Even if the lechem aponim remains on the table on the shulchan for many days, ein b'tachbun, there's no problem. Now Rashi says specifically, we're talking about a case like this. Normally the lechem aponim is supposed to be set every Shabbos. So every Shabbos they put a fresh set of lechem aponim on the table, on the shulchan, they take off the old ones, they burn the levona on the mizbeach on Shabbos itself. On Shabbos itself, the mission describes in Menachos over there that you have the two sets of kohenim coming over there, one holding the new lechem upon him, one to take out the old lechem upon him. As they're sliding out the old, they're sliding in the new. So that way the old lechem upon him is over a week old at that point. It was baked on the previous Friday.
No,
they could. A nest happened, and it would stay fresh. That's the nest that I was just mentioning a minute ago, that they would show the shulchan to everybody doing to the Oiler Regal during the three Yom Tovim to show them, look how much Hashem loves you, that the lechem aponim is still fresh after a week. But yeah, let's say, for example, this week is Parshas Matos Masei, so let's say, if this Shabbos, for example, they were going to be taking the lechem aponim off the shulchan and putting new, the old lechem aponim would have been based on Friday of Parshas Pinchas, and the new one is based on Friday of Parshas Matos Masei. So, So when they take it off, it's a week and one day old. Anyway, the point is that, so that's normally how they would do it. They would do it on Shabbos, they would do all that on Shabbos, and then they'd distribute.
That's why we eat this on Shabbos?
Yes, that's why we say the Lakasa, thank you. Yeah, that's why we say the Lakasa, after Musaf on Shabbos, because Musaf and Kurdim in the Mazishin, yeah.
So they used to do it after Musaf?
So after the Kurdim in the Mazishin, right. Okay, so normally they would do all that on Shabbos. But the Mishnah describes over there, what happens if they didn't do it on Shabbos? Let's say they ended up putting the lechem upon him and the bazichin and everything only on Sunday. Bazichin are the spoonfuls of levoina that go along with it. So what happens in a sat alam arachas levoina zach, let's say, in that section. Okay, so what happens? The bazichin means spoon. Yeah. Okay. So what would happen if they were to set up the lechem upon him and the bazichin on Sunday instead of on Shabbos? Well, then you have a problem, because they have to remain on there for 7 full days. So what do you do? If you were to take them off the following Shabbos, then it's possible. So that wouldn't work. What you have to do, therefore, is you have to leave them until the following Shabbos. So to put it in terms of right now, today, you know, this week is Parshas Matos Masei. If they were to have put it on Sunday of this week, on Sunday of Parshas Matos Masei, they can't take it off Shabbos Parshas Matos Masei. They have to wait till Shabbos Parshas Zvorim to take it off. So it's on there now for almost 2 weeks.
Because it was not put on Shabbos.
Choice that's discussed is based on the Gemara over there that actually... that's what we're saying. It's still acceptable. Choice that's actually discussed is that actually we mean even more than that. We mean even if it was placed on Shabbos, even like it was supposed to be, nevertheless, if you left it over an extra Shabbos, then it's also fine. The point being, in other words, that no matter how long you leave it on the shulchan, it doesn't become possible.
So there... Only
there. No. Huh? The shulchan was inside the head. So do we compare a varim that sit on top of the mizbeach overnight? Do we compare them to the lechem aponim on the shulchan, where even if it stays there beyond the number of the 7 days, then there's no problem? Or maybe not. Maybe we should compare the mizbeach to the floor. of the Azara, namely that just like if because after all, the Mizbeach is built into the floor, it's not a klisharis, it's not a movable klisharis like a shofan. So therefore, if you were to leave something on top of the Mizbeach, maybe it would be the equivalent of leaving it on the floor in the Azara, where it would become potel kamalos hashachar. By the way, Tosfos points out, I mean, we had earlier in the Masechta, we had Rabbi Yehuda learning from the Pasuk in Malachim that Shlomo HaMelech was Mekadesh, the floor of the Azara, the floor itself could be used to be makruv korbanos. However, Tosfos says, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that the floor is not makruv stolen. That you don't say regarding the floor, im olo lo yeh. The floor is still distinct from the Mizbeach as far as that goes. Okay, anyway. If it's on the floor, then it becomes possible. Come alois shachar. Omalei, the Rabbi answers him. The answer is ein lina b'roish shom mizbeach. There's no such thing as lina on top of the mizbeach. The answer is like the first possibility. It's like the shulchan in that regard. As long as a piece is on top of the mizbeach, then you can be mach with it. Then even if afterwards. It was taken off the Mizbeach, it's not considered possible. It's not one of those im yodu lo yalu, you put it back up on the Mizbeach and burn it. That's how we know it's even from Mizbeach. The question is, kibla minei oloi, did Rava, so Rava had asked the question to Rabbiya, did he accept Rava's answer? Did he accept that's how it is or not? Maybe he held differently. Toshma, the Ismar, we can prove from the following. We have the following discussion. A vorim shalonu ba'azara, if a vorim are staying overnight in the azara, on the floor, that is, makasha v'holach kol ha'layla, so fine, you can go and burn them anytime during the night on the mizbeach, that's a vorim ufjorim, can be burned anytime during the night. Lon b'roish shal mizbeach, and on the other hand, if they stayed overnight on top of the mizbeach, till alois hashachar, also makasha v'holach kol ha'layla, then you can continue, or you can also continue burning them forever. There's no time limit on them. In other words, even Rava agrees. Rava was asking Rava, again, in the case where it was taken off the mizbeach, where it remained on the mizbeach the whole time, then there's no question that lina doesn't apply to it.
There is neither.
That's true. The meila would apply to them, right? Yodu, the question is, what happens if they were taken off the mizbeach? That's the question. Rabba Omer Yalu, Rabba Omer Lo Yalu. Rabba says you should put them back up on the Mizbeach because, in other words, because, again, Rabba held that even though they remained overnight on the Mizbeach till Alois HaShachar, they did not become possible, and therefore, once you take them down, then they're a kosher piece, not a possible piece, so you put it back up on the Mizbeach. Rabba Omer Lo Yalu, and Rabba says you don't put them back because it's a possible, and it's a possible where the usual rule applies. Once it's Yodu, once it came off the Mizbeach, Lo Yalu, you don't put it back.
And it's supposed to be when it's not possible.
Right.
Regardless of the time.
Well, not so much it's not possible. Rava would say maybe it's possible. Rava would say fine, it's possible, but nevertheless, lo yodu, it's still one of those ones where you don't take, it's not one of the psalim that you take off and there. So fine. Rava can say that it's possible because he can hold that yeshlinah, but Rosh Hashanah is there. But he would argue that fine, if, as long as it stays on top of the mizbeach, practically speaking, doesn't matter whether it's possible or not. Either way, it's one of the psalim that once it's on top of the mizbeach, then you go ahead and burn it. You don't take it off. Lo yodu. So therefore you leave it there and you go ahead and burn it. The question is only if you took it off, then Rava would say the psul that already happened, that alois hashachar, now is effective because it's yodu, because it came off the mizbeach, therefore lo yodu. Rava says it never became possible. Shmamina lo kibla mine, that means that Rava did not accept Rava's answer. Shmamina, okay, so that proves it. It proves that Rava did not accept Rava's answer. And the fact that Amram passed like Rava, because we have the usual rule, the halacha kibasroi, beginning from the time of Rava and Abai, the halacha is usually like later Amaroyim, and Rava is the next generation after Rava. He's the next generation. That's you see. He was a Talmud. You're asking him a question. Okay.
After Rabba was
Rav Yosef, as Rosh Hashiva was Rav Yosef, then Abaya, then Rabba. No, Rav Huna was before Rabba.
Oh, no, that's a different one. Yeah, right.
Okay.
Rabba,
then Huna. No, there was Rav Huna, then Rabba, then Rav Yosef, then Abaya, then Rabba.
Abaya and
Rabba. Yeah. Yeah.
So they're pretty close.
Yeah. So, I mean, Abaya was, Rav Yosef was a Rosh Hashiva only for 2.5 years. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Mishnah says.
That was in your phone.
Rumas, I don't know if it was in Rumas, it was in Brachos. Okay. The Mishnah had said, Keshem Sham is Be'ach Mekadosh. We said just like the Mizbeach is Mekadosh things, so also the Kevesh is Mekadosh things in the same sense, that in Ololo Yerdu, if one of the Psalim goes onto the Kevesh, onto the ramp of the Mizbeach, and also you go and keep it on the Mizbeach and burn it. And he said that not only the Kevesh, but also, we said, Klei Sharis on the Kadosh also, things that go in there. So, Tanu Rabbanan, we learn in a Braita. So how do we know these things? The Pasuk says, Hanegeah b'mizbeach. The Pasuk says anything that touches the Mizbeach becomes holy. So, Ein li'el mizbeach. So, based on that, you would only know that din applies to the Mizbeach. Kevesh minayin. How do we know it also applies to the Kevesh? Tanu Rabbanan, Es ha-mizbeach. Therefore, the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says, Es ha-mizbeach. So on the side over here, Shitim Mokubet, let's bring a different here. So, El ha-mizbeach. The actual pasuk is Kol Hanegeah b'Mizbeach, but you have other psukim that mention Es HaMizbeach or El HaMizbeach or whatever. So that's the Rashi brings over here the pasuk Es HaMizbeach, or Moshe to Es HaMizbeach, that Hashem tells Moshe you should anoint Es the Mizbeach, meaning not only Mizbeach but also the Kevesh. It is, but we usually daushin, we have the famous thing, we usually daushin the word Es. In some cases, fine, it's because the word S is needed just in order to clarify the thing. But in general, we have the famous thing where it says it's brought in Kedushin and in some other places that Shimon Ham Suni or Nechemya Ham Suni was daushing all the S in the Torah, so they came to S Hashem Lekachira, and later on Rabbi Akiva explained how you can douch in that as well, with Abbas Tamar Chachamim. But yeah, in general, we douch in the word S. But anyway, Shit Mokubetis brings from a different gear over here that El HaMizbeach. Okay, anyway. Fine, so that explains how we know the Kevesh as well. Klei Sharis Minayin, how we know also that this din applies to the Klei Sharis. Talmud Lema, Kol Hanegeah, B'Ham Yikdash, therefore it says regarding the Klei Sharis, anything that touches them becomes holy. So same.
What
if the Kevesh comes in? Sorry, the Klei Sharis. Because S means something that's secondary to the Mizbeach. The Kevesh is attached to them, not attached to, but it's a thing that goes along with the Mizbeach, because you need it in order to get up on the Mizbeach. It's not attached. That's actually the next point we're going to get to. But we learned before that there's a space between them, and we're going to deal with that in this next study now. But yeah, but nevertheless, it's a tuple for the Mizbeach in the sense that the Mizbeach needs a Kevesh, because you need a Kevesh in order to get up onto the Mizbeach, right? As opposed to clay shards or something independent of the Mizbeach. So you can't learn them from there. So therefore, you need a separate thing. Bominei Rishlokish Mirab Yechman. Rishlokish asks Rabbi Yechman the following question. Klei Sharis, Maushi Kadshuet Apsolim. Are Klei Sharis Makadish things that are possible? So Rashi understands, so first we'll learn how Rashi talks about it, and then we'll deal with how Tosis explains it, how it explains the Gemara. But first Rashi. Well, so the question is like this, according to Rashi. Let's say you have a mincha that became Tomei, and then you put that mincha into a Klei Sharis. Now, we have the rules as follows. Before mincha has kedushas aguf, there comes a point, a person sets aside a certain amount of flour and oil for a mincha. So at that point, it has kedushas dom. At that point, it only has the value of it as kedusha. Meaning, therefore, if it became tomei or something else happened to prevent it from being offered, then you could be paid in it. You could buy it back from hekdesh, as you usually would, and then you're allowed to do whatever you want with it. On the other hand, once it's placed in a klei sharis, usually it gets kedushas aguf.
Even if it's tomei?
That's the question. That's the koin zarashi, that's the question. So if it was tohor and you put it in a klei sharis and there's no question that then it has kedushas aguf, and now even if after that it became tomei, you couldn't be paid in it. Here the question is, it was tomei before you put it into the keli, does it nevertheless get kedushas aguf and therefore you can't be paid in it, or not?
We never had this question.
We never had it, no.
We had, if the tumor becomes also safe in the
yes, right, well then we know you can't be carried out, everybody, yes. But here we're dealing with Amalei Tinisua. So Rabbi Yechman says, you can see from our Mishnah, Kashem Sham is Be'ach Ba'ach Kevesh Mekadshin at the Roi Lahem, Kach Kelem Mekadshin. We said in our Mishnah that just as the Mizbeach and the Kevesh are Mekadesh things that are suitable for them, and we said that means even if they're possible, but they have a certain suitability, the same way Kalin was.
Wait a minute, that could mean after the Kalin.
No, but the point is, in other words, if you have, again, you said even if you had a Korban that became possible before it actually came onto the Mizbeach, let's say, for example, they shechted at Shalom Lishma, or Shinu, whatever, Machshavas Man, or the blood spilled, or what have you. Nevertheless, we say Imol Lo Yerdu, because the Mizbeach and the Kaddish was going for it. Kach Kalim Kaddishim, the same way Kalim on the Kaddish, whatever's roi for them. This mincha is, in that sense, roi for the keli, because fine, it became tame, but nevertheless, that's no different than a korban becoming tame and then being placed on the mizbeach. So yeah, the answer should be, therefore, that no pidyon. Amalei, so, Rish Lakish says, you're misunderstanding my question. I'm not asking about pidyon, and I understand that you can't be pidyon them once you place them in a kli shoris. My question is, can you go ahead and be mak with them on the mizbeach? His question is, in other words, so it became tame before it was placed in the kli shoris. The question is, though, again, just like we had in our Mishnayos that you can have a korban that became tame or otherwise possible, and we said you're not supposed to lachila go and be mak with it, fine, but b'di'evad if you did it, then olu lo yerdu. So therefore, the question would be the same thing over here. Would we say im olo lo yerid?
1 second.
Or not even im olo lo yerid. No, rather what we would say, no, never mind. This is before it even replaces. Once it comes into the klishore, maybe the same way as with the mizbeach, we say im olo lo yerid. In other words, you leave it on the mizbeach. Maybe the same way over here, once in a klishore, even though it became tame, then you should go ahead and be mak with it. Because the keli already made it effectively im olo lo yerid. That once it was placed into the keli, you don't take it out of the keli and dispose it.
A minute ago, that the kevesh was considered like the mizbeach, but not the keli sharet.
Klei sharet minayin tamud lema kolon egeya behem yiftash. We said we had a different process for the keli, but we had. The Mishnah clearly told us that klei sharet on the kavesh. So the Shlokish is saying, my question is, once this mincha, which was tome, was placed in a klei sharet, should we say that you should go ahead and be makriv it on the mizbeach? Because it's the equivalent of im olu lo yerdu. It's the equivalent of leaving it on the mizbeach and go ahead and putting it into the fire. Maybe now, once it's in a kli shoris, then you have to go and put it on the mizbeach.
Kli shoris can become tame, but the mizbeach cannot.
That doesn't make a difference anyway. A mincha, first of all, mincha that's tame is not going to be matadish. It's not going to be matame. No, food is not matame.
Let's finish the flow.
Okay. Food is not matame. Okay. So Rabbi Yochanan answers him, okay, so what's the problem? Honami Kanena. We have that in our Mishnah also, because we have the case in our Mishnah, Shekiblu Psulim Vizoku Es Damai. One of the Psulim of our Mishnah was the case where people who were Psul received the blood and sprinkled it. Now, on the face of it, my lav Shekiblu Psulim Vizoku Psulim. On the face of it, we're talking about that we mean that they did both. Now, you have to ask, once they did the Kabbalah, then already it's Psul.
They
were tame or whatever kind of puzzle they were. But whoever did Kabbalah was puzzle, whether it was Zohar or Zohar or what have you. The point is, once the Kabbalah happened, the psul, and it's already puzzle, why would it then be mentioning the Drisa? The reason must be to tell us that if also that if you have both, that if it was the psulim did Kabbalah and did Drisa, that's when we say that you shouldn't be putting the Ivarim on the Mizbeach and only be Yevet if you did, then Olo Lo Yerdu. Implying, in other words, says Rabbi Yochanan, since the Mishnah mentions that case, that seems to imply that if the Kabbalah was done by a Kosher, but then the Zrika was done by a Kosher, then that's considered a perfectly good Zrika to that extent, and therefore you should go ahead L'Chatzila and put the Ivarim on the Mizbeach.
And the reason...
Only when the Psulim did the Kabbalah. And the reason would be why? Because again, because you would say once the blood was received in the kli shoris, then already it meant that you're supposed to l'chatchila go ahead and sprinkle it on the mizbeach. So applying that to the case of the tamei mincha would be the same idea. Once it goes into a kli shoris, then yes, you should be going ahead and putting it on the mizbeach. The answer is loy. The answer is, Rish Lakish would answer, no, because not necessarily is that what the Mishnah means. The Mishnah could mean, shekiblu psulim inami shezoku psulim, because the Mishnah doesn't have to mean that the psulim did both the Kabbalah and the Zrika. It can mean they did the Kabbalah or they did the Zrika. And then either way, then the point would be that the, that even that, that whether it became possible in the Kabbalah or whether the Kabbalah was perfectly kosher and then it only became possible in the Zuka, either way, you shouldn't be putting the Ivarim on the Mizbeach, and only be de-evid if you did im all the lawyers. So therefore, Rish Lakish says, you can't answer my question based on our Mishnah because you can't be certain whether our Mishnah means that the Kabbalah and the Zrika were possible, or only the Kabbalah or only the Zrika. And if you learn that way, then you don't have an answer. Okay.
We know that if the Kabbalah was done by Absul, then what?
Well, that's the question. Rabbi Yochanan is assuming that the Mishnah is implying for us that if a apostle did the Kabbalah, nevertheless, since it was received in a Kli Sharei, then therefore you should go ahead and do the Zrika. The Korban is possible, granted, but you should still go ahead and do the Zrika, and go ahead and burn the Evorim of it on the Mizbeach, and then do like you would do with a regular Korban, except for the fact that it's possible. And Rish Lakish, and therefore he says, by analogy, you could say the same thing, if a Mincha that was Tomei was placed into a Kli Sharei, and you still go ahead and on that with it on the Mizbeach. But Rish Lakish argues that, and says not necessarily, because the Mishnah may be implying just the opposite, that once a apostle was Makabal, then you should not be putting the Evorim on the Mizbeach of Tchilah. And only if he did Bidiyeb, then he all the lawyer. So therefore, if we were to draw an analogy from that to the Mincha, it would be the other way around, that once the Mincha was received in a Kli Sharei, but it was Tomei, then you shouldn't be putting it on the Mizbeach of Tchilah. And only Bidiyeb, if you did, then fine, him all the lawyer. So you can't, because you can't prove, because you don't know when the Mishnah says, Shekiblu Vizorku, whether it means and or whether it means or. Tursus has a number of questions on Rashi's explanation, and one of the questions, interestingly, we might as well mention it. If you look about 6-7 lines from the top of the narrow lines of the Tursus on page 9 of the days, you can see that one of the questions was from Harav Rabbeinu Peter, which is an interesting name for one of the Bali Atosfas. Yeah, on the face of it, it says the Gosha named Peter, but yeah. I don't know what nationality he was. We do know, actually, we know very little about him, just like we know very little about most of the Bali Atosfas. We do know that he was killed Al-Kiddush Hashem.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it's an interesting name. It's not a name that became popular among Jews in later generations, but nevertheless, yeah. Okay. There is, by the way, I mean, there's the famous thing that goes back at least to the times of the Rishonim, although not all of them accept it as historically true, that actually the original Peter, the original Peter, was actually a double agent sent by the Sanhedrin to wean the early Christians away from Yiddishkeit so they're not machshel other Jews into joining it. So therefore, that may have been why this Rabbeinu Peter, why his parents felt that it's appropriate to name him that, because, yeah. Okay.
And this is
before
Petersburg
was. Peter has been a...
What do I know?
Okay. All right. Anyway. So Rabbeinu Peter asks questions on Rashi. Other Bali Atursis asks questions on Rashi. So Tursis ends up answering as follows. Tursis ends up saying that, no, the pshat over here is different. Rabbi Yechanan thought that Rish Lakish's question is not regarding the question of Pidyon at all. Fine, he knew that Rish Lakish is not asking about Pidyon. It's clear that once a mincha goes into a Kli Sharis, you can't be poter. Rabbi Yechanan thought the question was, if you take a posel mincha in a Kli Sharis and put it on top of the Mizbeach, do we say, we could argue, on the one hand, it's on top of the Mizbeach, therefore maybe im olo lo yerdu. On the other hand, we could argue that the Kli Sharis itself makes a hefsek. On the other hand, we could argue that the Kli Sharis itself maybe has the kedusha to not be considered a chassidza, so therefore the mincha is considered as if it's on the Mizbeach itself. So he says, therefore, you could deduce that from our Mishnah, that we said that just like the Mizbeach and the Kaddish, so are the Kelim and Kaddish, meaning the Kelim won't be a Chafitza. A Mincha in a Kelim on top of the Mizbeach will be considered like it's literally on the Mizbeach. Yes. But then Rish Lakish says, maybe what it means is, maybe what it means is that if you put a mincha or whatever in a keli on top of the mizbeach, then you have then you would say lo yeret. But the question rather would be, if you didn't put it on top of the mizbeach, if you only had it, it was in a keli. So again, the question is, therefore, should we l'chatchila be offering it on the mizbeach since it was miskadosh in a keli or not? And Rabbi Yechanan tries to answer him on the basis of our Mishnah, and then Rish Lakish says, but you could understand the Mishnah differently, and therefore not. So that's, in a nutshell, Tosafot's explanation. Okay, so now a topic that relates to this, and in fact, according to Tosafot, it's basically a continuation of the topic, because according to Tosafot, Rish Lakish's original question had to do with the question, or at least the way Rabbi Yechanan understood the question, had to do with the question of whether Avru Mizbeach to Mizbeach, whether the airspace above the Mizbeach is considered like the Mizbeach itself. So after all, here the Mincha is not literally on top of the Mizbeach, there's a Keli in the way. But you could argue that maybe once it's on top of the Mizbeach, once it's in the airspace above the Mizbeach, it's considered as if it's already on the Mizbeach. So, do we say that the air space on top of the Mizbeach is the equivalent of the Mizbeach or not? But let's say, in other words, Rashi describes, if you were to take a limb from a possible carbon, and you were to put it, you were to hang it up in the air above the Mizbeach, or hold it in the air on top of them, above the Mizbeach, would that be considered like it's already on the Mizbeach, therefore lo yerju, or maybe not, and therefore you can't take it down or not? So you want to say, Toshma, come on, prove from our Mishnah. We said Kishen Sham is Beach Mekadesh, Kap Kevesh Mekadesh. We said in our Mishnah that both the Kevesh and that both the Mizbeach itself and the Kevesh are Mekadesh Kotel Korbanos in the sense that he Olo Lo Yehu. Now we Amut Avim Mizbeach Lav Mizbeach Yomi. Now if you're going to say that the air space above the Mizbeach is not considered the Mizbeach, then you would also have to say Avim Kevesh Nami Lav Kevesh Yomi. Then fine, you would also have to say that the air space above the Kevesh is not considered like the Kevesh either. But in that case, if you were to say that only when the carbon is actually sitting on top of the kevesh, is it considered that in Olo Lo Yehudu, but as soon as you pick it up from the surface of the kevesh, then it's no longer right. It's right. Well, exactly. Then how are you bringing it up from the kevesh to the mizeh? It would be the equivalent of taking it off. So obviously, the answer has to be that the airspace above the kevesh is still considered like the kevesh, and therefore, even if you're walking up the kevesh holding the piece, it's still considered to be on the kevesh. That's the answer. Not necessarily, the Gemara says, because the nugget, like, because you can answer that they're dragging it along the kevesh, so it never actually leaves the surface of the kevesh. Okay, but the problem with that becomes, okay, inconvenient, but it still could be done. I mean, again, it's not necessarily that often that you would have stolen in the first place.
You cannot prove the other way around.
That's the point. In other words, you're asking the question whether Avir Mizbeach and Avir Kevesh is Mizbeach Domi or not. The answer is not necessarily from our Mishnah would you be able to prove it one way or the other, because you could say that it is Kevesh and therefore you could pick it up and walk it over onto the Mizbeach like normal, or you could say that not and therefore you have to drag it. Right.
Wait, why do you have to drag it?
Because then you would say as soon as you pick it off the Kevesh, it's not considered on the Kevesh anymore.
So how do you get on the Kevesh?
However it is.
Well, what are you talking about? If it's on the kevesh, then you have to bring it up to the... Yeah. Oh, I...
Imol Olo Yehudu, remember?
Yeah.
Okay, the problem is, v'ha'avu yesh ben kevesh l'mizeach, what about the airspace that we learned before back in the sixth paragraph, that there's a space between the kevesh and the mizeach, so when you're coming to that, even if you're dragging it, you come to that airspace, it's not on the kevesh, it's not on the mizeach.
Yeah.
So again, so one second.
The space doesn't it's very funny.
Well, Tosafot actually discusses over here. It's not necessarily that tiny. First of all, now Tosafot starts by discussing. Okay, if you say Avim is Be'ach and is Be'ach Dami, no problem, because below that space is the Sovia. You have the end of the kevesh over here, then you have the mizbeach going like this, and there's the sovev, and therefore, underneath that space is the sovev, and the sovev is fully part of the mizbeach. So if you say that Avir mizbeach is to mizbeach, then there's no problem. But the question is if you say that's not to mizbeach. But Tosafot then says, maybe not, because actually he brings from Rabbeinu Chaim that maybe it's even wider than that, because the implication from the Gemara earlier that talked about the space is that the space reaches all the way down to the floor. So in other words, it's not just the space is an
that's where the three tiles.
That's maybe that's where Rabbi Goin gets it from. Yeah, but anyway, the point
is. I meant the space. In width, not in
depth. No, we're talking about in depth.
We've got to let
now
it go
on more.
We're too excited.
Because the carbon is not totally separated.
One second. That's what we're going to see in a second. But the point is, again, in other words, so here is the Kepesh. Here is the Mizbeach. Rabbeinu Chaim and Tosfos learns that actually the space is not just the width of the stove of the no more. It's actually a little more than that, because from the Gemara, from the implication of the Gemara over there, it seems that there's actually literally floor space between the Kepesh and the Mizbeach. Yeah. So therefore, it's wider than it's wider than an hour. Right. So that's the question. Obviously, shouldn't you have to say that the avir is considered like part of the mizbeach? Because otherwise, you would have a problem. Otherwise, how are you getting it over? Well, that's actually the question that Rabbeinu Chaim asked. That either way, then really, whether Aver Mizbeach is to Tevesh or not, then you is to Mizbeach or not, wouldn't have a problem on that.
Would have a problem.
Okay, but maybe the answer could be that even according to Rabbeinu Chaim, maybe you could infer that you have only a slight bit of space more than an hour.
Would not be
before
right.
Now you're
So the answer is Rubei Lakevesh Kitevesh, Rubei Lamizbeach Kamizbeach. Very simple. You could say you're dragging this piece along, let's say. When you have most of it is still on the Kevesh, then it's still considered to be completely on the Kevesh. Then you have most of it on the Mizbeach, and therefore now it's considered to be on the Mizbeach. So you don't worry about that space in between, because most of the piece is never above it. Okay.
It can be on both, by the way.
Well, that's also true, yeah. Okay, so the question is, if you're going to explain that way, tifshit meha hadaboy Rami Bachama, then you should be able to answer on this basis a question that Rami Bachama asked. He asked the question, yesh chibur lo oilin oilon. When you have, if you're bringing something up onto the Mizbeach, if you place only part of it on the Mizbeach, is the rest of it also considered as if it's already on top of the Mizbeach? Or not? Or do we consider that only the part on the Mizbeach?
The question is,
Rami Bachama is asking, when you have something being put on the Mizbeach, do we consider that if you have part of it was placed on the Mizbeach, but the rest of it is still on the floor, okay, it's a long limb, is it considered to be put on the Mizbeach or not? Or do we consider only the part that's, on the Mizbeach or not? Yeah. So in that case, so based on what we just answered, you should be able to answer the question. When most of it is on the Kevesh, it's considered like it's on the Kevesh and so forth. Okay, the Gemara says, "Hold on, Kasha. Okay, that's not a big problem. Fine, Tishrei. Fine, you can answer. You can cap it if we say, as we're saying over here, that the Aver of the Mizbeach is not necessarily like the Mizbeach, and therefore you have to drag it from the Kevesh to the Mizbeach, and therefore you have to go according to Rav. Fine, then that would answer Rami Bahama's question." But that still leaves open the question if we do say that Aver Mizbeach is Mizbeach or not, because then you don't have the whole issue of dragging anyway, then you just pick it up. But yeah.
We don't know.
Fine. So but anyway, it's fine. According to one way of looking at it, you would have a way of answering his question. That's not a big deal. Okay. Masnifa Rava Barachan. However, Rava Barachan asks, here's another point that we should bring up in this connection. The Iyamit Adam Mizbeach Mizbeach Dami. Now let's say, so if you're going to argue that the airspace above the Mizbeach, and for this purpose the Mizbeach includes the Sovir as well, is considered like the Mizbeach itself, well then you have to ask, then how would you have the scenario where you have a case of Chutzpah Zmanai when it comes to an Ola Sa'oif? What's chutzpah zmanah is when he has in mind that he's going to, among other things, can be that he's going to burn the korban the next day. That's chutzpah zmanah. That makes it kigal, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. But the question is like this. The melika of an oilas ta'oiv takes place at the top of the mizbeach. We learned back in the sixth Seder, it takes place either he stands on the sovev or actually on top of the mizbeach or whatever. If you're going to say that the airspace above the mizbeach, that something that's already there is considered as if it's on top of the mizbeach, well then, hakol the mizbeach, then the mizbeach has already grabbed a hold of it. It's already considered to be on the mizbeach. We established before in the first perek that when something um, that that as long as something is on top of the Mizbeach, then we said, im olo lo yerdu. We said that even if we're going to argue that it becomes possible, like Rava argued, nevertheless, you don't take it off the Mizbeach. That means it would be perfectly permissible to go and offer it and burn it the next day. So then how is this thought of Chutzlus Mano having any effect? He's having in mind something which would be perfectly mutter to do. Tosef asked the question, by the way, we learned in connection with the Ola Sa'of over there, we said that actually he doesn't literally have to do it all the way at the top of the Mizbeach. He's able to actually stand on the Sa'ov and reach down up to an Amma below him and do it because that's still on the top half of the Mizbeach. So in that case, it's not above the Avra Mizbeach, it's only above the Sa'ov. So Tosef answers two possibilities. One is Rashi learned over there that there was actually a little thing sticking out of the wall of the Mizbeach over there to prevent the blood from just trickling down onto the floor, so that would still be considered Avra Mizbeach. Or maybe the question is over here specifically according to Reb Nechemia, who said that it has to, that to be done on the top, at the very top of the Mizbeach, at the Tronos. Okay. Anyway, the question is, again, so Rav Bar Rachonim says, obviously on that basis, you have to say that Avim Mizbeach is not Mizbeach, because that's the only way to make Pigul work when it comes to another place. Masterful Reb Shimi Ba'ashi, so Reb Shimi Ba'ashi challenges that question, halom aloi. So he says, why not? Mashkacha tzwa, I can give you an example where it would work. Mashkacha tzwa, kugendomar, I'll give you a scenario where it's possible to have pigul by an olafoi. Kugendomar, suppose the person says, or has in mind, whatever, hareni mocha amanas lahirida lamocha ula aloi so ula akhtira. I'm doing the malika now, having in mind that tomorrow I'm going to take it off the mizbeach. Then I'm going, which at that point, according to Rava, then it became possible at Alois HaShachar. Then I'm going to put it back up, and then I'm going to burn it. Which, according to Rava, you're not allowed to do that, because at that point, it's already a possible that doesn't go on to the Mizbeach. It's in Yodu Lo Yalu. So,
according to Rava.
Rava. Yeah.
Rava would say
it's kosher, because he said that it didn't become possible at Alois HaShachar. So that's the question. Hanichal Rava. So fine, that works out well, according to Rava. Da'amal Linema Elas Beresha Mizbeach. He says that lina can still be effective even on top of the mizbeach. So the thing does become possible just as long as it stays on the mizbeach. Then fine, him olo lo yodu, and therefore you can go burn it. El the rubber. So therefore, if you take it off from there, then it is already a possible that shouldn't go back up onto the mizbeach. So that's when we can say, according to rubber, this scenario of malika and doing pigul would work. El the rubber do ama ein lina meyelus b'reish mizbeach. But according to rubber, who said, b'chalal, that lina doesn't even begin on the top of the Mizbeach, that it, as long as it's on top of the Mizbeach, it never becomes possible by lina. Less of a machshava, then his machshava should have no effect, because it's perfectly permissible to be machshava the next day, or the day after that, or whatever, yeah, so the figure wouldn't be affected. Okay, the answer
is... it means just...
Now, you could have... Now, obviously, the Gemara could have answered that you have figure... Still, it's possible to have tigul when it comes to the sprinkling of the blood, to that zar or the mystery, as the case may be. However, the Gemara wants to find over here that we said that you can do, it's possible to have tigul by either of the two avodas of an olas olis, the malika and the hazar. So therefore we want to, not hazar rather mitzvah. So therefore, we want to find an example where it'll work by Malika. According to Rabbah, it doesn't seem it would work. If you say that Avim is Be'ach and is Be'ach. So wouldn't that force us to say, at least according to Rabbah, that Avim is Be'ach is not Kimis Be'ach? Yeah. The answer is no. Rabbah Nami Mashkafas. Well, no, because I can find a scenario of Pigul when it comes to Malika also according to Rabbah. To go into Omar, Harini Moka Manaflo Rida Kodama Mudashakar. Suppose he says, I'm doing the Malika, having in mind that I'm going to take off this bird from the Mizbeach before Alois HaShachar, Ulaha Alois HaLaha Omar HaShachar, and then I'm going to put it back after Alois HaShachar. Definitely, if it's off the Mizbeach, Alois HaShachar, Rabbah agrees that Lina takes effect. That Lina takes effect, and now it's possible and you can't put it back. So you can't prove one thing or the other. You can't prove one thing or the other from, so you, Rava Baruch Hanan, are arguing on the basis of the business of Oilas Ha'oi from Pigul, that you have to say, Adam is Be'ach is not like the Mizbeach. Not necessarily can you prove it, because both according to Rava and according to Rava, you can make it work even if you say that Adam is Be'ach is Mizbeach. You can still find a scenario where Pigul could take place.
They would both agree on this scenario.
Well, no, that's what we said. Robert would have one scenario, Robert would have a different scenario. Robert would agree to the scenario we said for Robert also. Fine, but Robert is saying you have two, according to Robert, you have two possible scenarios. One where you left it there, one where you left it there all, one where you left it there all night and then took it off the next day, and then the other one, according to Robert, where you took it off before Alois the Shachar and put it back after. Okay. So, continues Rav Shini Bar Ashi. So actually, lahach disa miyatip shayt da'avim is ba'achim is ba'achim. On the contrary, you should go in the other direction, and you should be able to learn from, and you should be able to learn from the case of bird korbanos that the avim is ba'ach must be like the mizbeach. You're arguing to say that it can't be on the basis of olas ha'oif. I'm pointing out to you, says Rav Shini Bar Ashi, that there's no proof from olas ha'oif because it could be made to work.
Either way,
but I can prove to you actually that Adam Mizbeach is Kemizbeach from a different case involving bird korbanos. The Isak that Adam Mizbeach loves Kemizbeach, dummy, because he says like this, if you're going to think that the airspace above the Mizbeach is not considered like the Mizbeach, then you have to ask yourself, then how would you have, if you have a Chatas Ha'oif that became possible, and for example, he did the Malika Shaloy Lashma, and actually, Rashi adds over here that what happened is, let's say, again, with a chafas ha'oif, usually you do it on the bottom half of the mizbeach. But if he were to do the malika on the top half of the mizbeach, we said that in and of itself doesn't make it possible. The only thing that makes it possible is if you do the malika shalei lishma, or if you do the hazar in the wrong part of the mizbeach. But after all, look, if it was done shaloi
lishma.
So if you did the malika, regardless where you did the malika, whatever part of the mizbeach you did the malika on, it's kosher. But if you did the hazar on the wrong part of the mizbeach, then it would become possible. And also if you had shaloi lishma, but you have to ask that this, chafas ha'oif tefillah, hechi maze midama. Then how are you sprinkling the blood? Havale Yarud, at that point, now what would happen? So you did the Malika, Shaloi Lishma, at that point it becomes possible, but we're saying at that point though, there's still the next thing to do is the Hazar. Now what does Hazar consist of? Unlike with the Ola, where we said that you do Mitzu, you take the body of the bird and press it against the Mizbeach to squeeze out the blood. In the case of the Chatas, we said you hold it a little distance away from the Mizbeach and squeeze, and it squirts out towards the wall of the Mizbeach. Well then, if you're going to argue,
you press it, Hazar, you sprinkle it
from a distance, right? So, then how would you be able to sprinkle it? Have a layyotum. At that point, it would be considered that it came off the mizbeach, because not above the mizbeach anymore, because you'd be holding it some distance away from the mizbeach and then squirting. And,
you have to say,
have a mizbeach, yeah. Is to mizbeach, because that's the only way, yeah. So, one second. Avim Mizbeach, Lav to Mizbeach would mean as long as it's not actually touching or on top of the Mizbeach, then it's not considered to be on the Mizbeach. Avim Mizbeach to Mizbeach. Like this, he's standing on the stove. If he does the Hazar, so if you say Avim Mizbeach is to Mizbeach, fine. He's standing above the stove. He's standing on the stove. He's holding the bird still above the stove. If it's still within the airspace of the Mizbeach. Because it is. It's above the stove. But if you say Avim Mizbeach, Lav to Mizbeach, as soon as he moves it away from the Mizbeach, it's not on the Mizbeach anymore. Then it would be Im Yodu Lo Yalu. Then how are you putting it on the Mizbeach?
And the Sovev?
Yes, the Sovev is definitely considered part of the Mizbeach. Yeah.
But if you say
Avim Mizbeach, Lav to Mizbeach, then any, as long as it's not actually touching the Mizbeach or on top of the Mizbeach, then it's not. And Shaiv Sulim Hechi Zorek Kumidoma. And what about other psulim? Cases, for example, where Rashi says, let's say, for example, we had the case at the beginning of our parak where the blood became possible, and we still said, Ram Gamliel said, Im Olu Lo Yodu, how would you be able to sprinkle it from the blood? If you say that Adam is there, is not to Mizbeach, then you can't do that, because as long as you're not touching the Mizbeach, then it's not in the airspace of the Mizbeach anymore. Okay, the answer is demagalu. Okay, so the answer would be, that's fine. In cases like that, what you do is you actually touch it to the mizbeach. So when it comes to the chatas ha'oif, you wouldn't do the sprinkling in the normal way by holding it away from the mizbeach. You would hold it next to the mizbeach and squirt it. And in the case of the behemoth, the same thing, you would... That, well, that has up.
Yeah,
that has up. But that's the question. You have to be touching. That's the question. The question is, ha-ha-zahi. In that case, and that's not hazah misri, then that's misri, that's doing like an olothoi, which is possible. And similarly, ha-zrika, you'd argue that that's considered zrika when it comes to a behemoth, you'd say they actually have to be touching the blood to the wall of the mizeach, that would be tshicha, that would be pouring, which is a different thing. Now you do by chur and whatever, but the oi, and besides that, anyway, you have to ask, is that the normal way of doing hazah? Is that the normal way of doing zrika? So you can't make that work. So therefore that would force us to say Adam is Be'ach and is Be'achim. So that's Rav Shimon Bar Ashi's point. However, Rav Ashi says still, no, because actually not necessarily can you still definitively answer the question, because even not get over Rosh HaMizbeach, if the person is actually standing on top of the Mizbeach and holding on to the thing, Hochinami, then indeed there's no question that it's considered to be on the Mizbeach, because the person himself is standing on some part of the Mizbeach, such as the Sogi.
I was thinking that like
Shabbat. Ki Ka'omar. Ki Ka'omar, the whole question that we could be asking about Adam Mizbeach would be Talanu Bakanya. Let's say you hung them on a stick above the Mizbeach. So Rashi describes, you know, what we're talking about, let's say, if the person is not standing on the Mizbeach at all, he's standing on the floor, he takes
and not on the Seder,
he takes a stick and it puts a piece of the korban or something on the end of the stick and reaches up.
So that
now it's hanging over the top of the Mizbeach. Then you could ask whether Avon Mizbeach and Mizbeach on me or not. The mind, so what would be the din? And the answer is Teiku.
That we don't know.
So actually, the Rambam passes that Avram is Be'ach and is Be'ach. First of all, which, in other words, based on Rashi's proof. As far as Rav Ashi's point, so actually some of the Noisa Kalim say, the reason why is because ultimately, first of all, there are some of the Noisa Kalim that argue that you have other Gemaras. We had a Gemara earlier in Armasechta that dealt with the question whether Avar Azara Azara. We have cases over there where the animal is hanging, where the person is hanging, or whatever. So one possibility is that Rambam is not only basing himself on our Gemara, but also on other Gemaras as well, to conclude that indeed Avar Mizbeach is definitely just like with the Azara, so also it would be with the Mizbeach, that the Avar is definitely like the Mizbeach. Another possibility is fine, that Amnam is saying, because the Gemara said Teiku, therefore, okay, so we have to be Machmer, and we have to say, therefore, we should consider that the thing is considered to be on top of the Mizbeach, and therefore, Lo Yehudu, that we shouldn't take it all. Okay. Mishnah says, Chlei Halach Mekadshin Es Halach. When we said in the previous Mishnah that clay shoreth on the Kaddish, things that are roi for them, things that are suitable for them, so now let's qualify that. Clay halach mekadshin etalach, kalim that are meant for liquids, blood or wine or oil, are mekadish liquids, but not solid. Umidis yavish mekadshes et yavish. And the measures that are used for dry things, for flour, for example, are mekadish only dry things. But not vice versa. And clay alach makadishes the yavish, lo yavish makadishes the lach.
Well,
one that
obvious.
Well, no, it might not have been so obvious.
It's
not
obvious. If you put something in a holy vessel,
first of all, actually, we're going to see in the Gemara that it's not so simple. We're going to see in the Gemara that there were some qualifications for that. But so that's what we're going to see. That what it means is that they're not makadish them to a certain they're makadish them to a certain extent, but not completely. So we'll see that in the Gemara. Rashi points out an interesting question, which is, why is the Mishnah calling the ones for liquid kalim and the ones for dry things midas? Okay, so Rashi says the reason is like this. When it comes to things that are used for dry things, you have the Mishnah describes in Menachos, they had two midas, they had two measuring utensils that are used for the two measuring cups that are used over there, an isorin and a half an isorin, which are used they're used for various kinds of menachos. The point being, Rashi says that you don't really have any other kalim that are designated for dry things, only these. Because when you have later, you use the isorin and you use the half isorin to measure out the mincha in the first place. But afterwards, when you put it in the clay shoreth, you use one of the same kind of clay shoreth that are used at other times for blood or other things. You rinse it out at first, obviously, but that's the point. So that's the point. In other words, so we use the word midah. No, so that's the point. We use the word no. So that in the sense of the mizrachis are meant for both. That's what I was going to say. Mizrachis are usable for both. But what we mean, in other words, so the ones for dry are called midahs because you don't have any non-measuring utensils for dry things. You only have the ksara and the chafiya side. as opposed to for liquids, you have things like you have mizrachis and bowls and other things that are meant for liquids that aren't necessarily in measure. Tosfos asks on that because Tosfos points out you actually do have other kalim that are not measuring utensils that are used for dry things, among other things. You have the shulchan. Anyway, Tosfos explains differently. The difference is like this. When it comes to dry things, there's different ways that you can measure them. Because you can use the same kalim and measure different things in it because you can make it flattened, you can heat it. Yeah, so therefore, you're able to use the same keli for many different types of measurements of dry things, as opposed to when it comes to liquids. Now, you can't heat them up. But also, the point is, Tosfos says you actually need. Come on, but the
no code.
Okay, but the point is okay. One second. The point is Tosfos says that when it comes to liquids have different consistencies. Therefore, you actually have that. If you have, for example, let's say you're going to have in some cases a third of a hin of wine and a third of a hin of oil. Let's say those aren't going to be the same amount because wine and oil have different consistencies that you can't use. Because not actually because
measure of liquid is
measure. But it does, because you have, in other words, because, Tosfos gives the example, for example, wine versus water. Wine is thicker than water, therefore you need a different kind of measuring utensil to get the same amount of wine as you would of water.
Because it stays behind in the clay?
Well, because it does heap up a little bit more, yeah, because since wine is thicker, therefore it's able to heap up more.
Are you talking as weight, as far as weight is concerned? It cannot be volume.
The Bashas, then we're talking about weight. So the Bashas, we're talking about weight. A certain volume of wine would be a little bit heavier than an equivalent.
Wine is
a different
weight than water. It's lighter because the alcohol is lighter.
Okay, maybe. Whatever. Okay, but it's thicker. But it's thicker on the other
side. A greater density than water.
Yeah. Okay. So that would be the point. So apparently, choice
was... What about the alcohol?
Okay, then I don't know.
What about
that? The alcohol content is not that much, relatively speaking. Okay, anyway, apparently Tosfos is understanding. If you're saying that, then apparently Tosfos would understand that you're doing them by weight rather than by volume. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Klei HaKodesh Shenikvu, Kalim of Kodesh that got a hole, can you still use them? Im Osin Behen Mein Malachim Shoyu Osin Behen Shleimim, if you're able to use them for the same purpose that you were able to when they were whole, makadshin, then they're makadish things that you put into them. Being lab ain't makadshin. But if not, then they're not usable anymore, and therefore they're not makadish anything you put into them. We'll see in the Gemara. V'chulam ain't makadshin el b'kodesh. All of these kalim are only makadish things when they're in the kodesh, when they're in the azara. But not if you were to take a kali outside the azara and fill it, then it wouldn't get. Sing my story. Omashmul loishanu elam midos. This that we're saying, that utensils, that kalim that are usually used for liquids, are not makadish dry things like the flour or mincha. That only applies to the measuring cups. So Rashi explains. Besides that, we said they had two measuring cups for solids. They also had, and the Gemara also, the Mishnah also tells us in the office, they have seven measuring cups there for liquids: a hin, a half a hin, a third of a hin, etc. So those are only meant for liquids. Those are only meant for wine and oil. So therefore, if you put flour in them, then it's not makadish then. Al mizraka is makadshin, but mizraka is the basin.
If you mix the flour with liquid.
That's what we're going to deal with that in a minute. But we're talking about over here just the dry flour.
Wow.
Right. But mizraka is the basins that are used, the basins that are used for catching the blood of the animal. Those are dual use. Those are not measuring containers. They're equally usable for liquids and for solids. Therefore, makadish. Therefore, they are makadish. Whatever you put into them, they're makadish liquids or dry things. And we know that Shenema Shneim Malayim Sodom, because we have, by the Korbanos of the Nesiim, it says that they had Karas Kesef Achat, they had one silver bowl, and Mizrach Echad Kesef, and they had one silver basin, and Shneim Malayim Sodom, and both of them were full of flour for a mincha. And both of them, the flour became Kaddish, so they're obviously therefore Mizrach, and Mimakaddish flour. Rav Achami Difti asked Ravina, what do you mean, though, that a mincha, Difti is the name of a place. So Rav Achami Difti asked Ravina, mincha lacha, what are you talking about? Mincha is a moist thing, because you mixed it with oil. So where are you getting the idea that should be makadish something that's completely dry? Let's say, for example, a mincha kote or a mincha sota, which are completely dry. How do you know?
The oil is mixed with the flour.
Amalei, sort of in answer, yeah, but Lenitzuch El Yavash Shabbat. Fine, but we still need the pasuk to tell us about the dry parts of it. Inevitably, when you mix flour with oil, inevitably you're going to have bits of it that remain dry. So therefore, the point is, you need to be told that the Mizrach is Makadish those as well. If you didn't have the pasuk, you wouldn't know that. Iboisema, or another possibility, true, a mincha is mixed with flour, and therefore it is moist. But mincha, the gabed dam to yavish dummy, but relative to blood, which is completely liquid, you can say that a mincha for that purpose is considered dry, even if it is blended with oil. Okay, but when I'm talking about when it's congealed, they wouldn't leave it for that long to get congealed, I don't think. But I don't know if it would congeal at room temperature or anything, but whatever, anyway. The point is, therefore, that yes, so that's why we need to be told that a mizrach, even though normally a mizrach is used for blood of korbanos, nevertheless, based on this pasuk, it's also able to be makadish a mincha, which is relatively more of a dry thing. And on top of that, even within a mincha itself, you can have dry parts.
So then you have to ask the question, how much of dry would it makadish?
That's the point. We're saying that's makadish everything. Even if the mincha is completely dry, it would be makadish. But in a normal case, the mincha is mixed with oil, so it's makadish. Both the parts that are thoroughly mixed with oil and are moist, and the parts that happen to remain dry because you didn't thoroughly mix it. And that's how it is. So you have three different types of containers that are used in the Beis Mikdash. You have the two measuring cups that are used for yavish, that are used in midos for yavish. Those are makadish only yavish, not lach. You have the other way around. You have the seven measuring cups that are used for liquid, the hin and so forth. They're makadish only liquids, not solids. And then you have the mizrachis, which are makadish either one.
And so the question is, if you put something in a keli that's makadish moist or solid,
then it becomes kadish either way. But if you put something yavish into the liquid one or vice versa, that will deal with in the Gemara actually the specifics of to what extent it's kadish and to what extent not. That will deal with tomorrow.